Hello, Red Shirts, and welcome to another episode of Follow Me and Die. I'm your host, Larry Hamilton, and today I want to catch up on the travel of the party in my campaign since they finally got started. My last episode was a few weeks ago. But first, a couple of announcements. I've had another of my PDFs on DriveThruRPG achieve Best Copper Seller. I've linked my publisher page in the show notes. Teespring has started selling masks, so I now have a mask in my Teespring store with a Follow Me and Die avatar and some viruses. And I also have a new red shirt that says, Cancer is the new red shirt. And I've linked my Teespring store in the show notes. Finally, I have a couple of call-ins from Joe Richter of the Hindsightless podcast and Carl Rodriguez. He's the DM of the Monday night BX game Orcs of Thar, called The Broken Lands, that I play in on Monday nights. Take it away, fellas.
Hey there, Larry. It's Joe from the Hindsightless podcast, also known as the Blind Rat on the Audio Dungeon. Excuse me, on the Audio Dungeon Discord. I just wanted to call and let you know that I just subbed to your YouTube channel and started watching some of your How to Use Roll20, and I found the beginning, you know, pretty helpful. I didn't make it through much of it yet, though. And I want to let you know that I picked up a couple of your PDFs off of DriveThru, man. So, good stuff. Hope you're doing well. Yeah, man, just to let you know. Oh, also, like, your new episodes aren't popping up on iTunes anymore. Are you still on iTunes? Anyway, hope all is well. Talk to you later. Peace out.
Hey, Joe, thanks for that. I'm glad you're liking the YouTube series. I'll have the link in the show notes. And buying my PDFs. Hey, I really appreciate that. I'll link my PDF store in the show notes. And Joe, yes, I'm still on iTunes. Why it wouldn't be showing, maybe because I'm not posting as regularly as I did. It's maybe lowered my priority and it's sharing out episodes. I don't know. But I'm still showing up as on iTunes. I've linked my podcast on a couple of different posts on Twitter using the iPod link, so it should, I'm still there, so maybe I need to call Apple, I don't know, we'll see what's going on. Thanks, and thanks for all your thoughts.
Hey Larry, good to hear your podcast again and call in. I always love hearing session summaries, and yours was seemed pretty fun. Hope the players had a good time. Take care of yourself, stay safe, you know our well wishes are with you for a quick resolution to your situation. I hope the surgery comes at the beginning of August, and there's a weight taken off your shoulders. Good luck. We'll be here for you. Thanks for playing in my game, too, and I will talk to you later.
And Carl, I'd like to say thanks for being the DM of the Monday night game. I've really enjoyed that, and thank you for your well wishes. My surgery will be Friday, August 12th, which will be a week from today if I get this out before midnight. Again, thank you very much for your thoughts, and I hope not to miss too many sessions, but we'll see how I'm feeling. So we've had five sessions since my last episode. Last Sunday was session number 41, and the players, of course, have managed to stretch out this journey by stopping to investigate every little thing that they've seen in the desert. It has served them well, as they have bested what creatures they found and gained a lot of loot in the form of coins, gems, jewelry, and various magic items. First session of the several since my last episode, they found a black obelisk in the desert that mentioned the Temple of Binding and caution, don't go further because it's very dangerous, etc., etc. They found that interesting because this is the first mention of the temple outside the temple that the players have seen. The Sand Vikings tell them that there are various obelisks that appear in the sands now and then that have markings like this. Then they came to a rock outcropping that had a ruined tower, and all that was left was the lower floor. The ranger in the party saw lion prints in the sand, but there weren't any lions around, so they figured they were out hunting. The gnome thief illusionist goes in and finds a lot of loot in a corner, and there was a brazier on a tripod, so he picked up the pan for the brazier, and as he lifted it, it tips, and all the coins and gems and other loot comes crashing out of it onto the floor, and this awoke the chimera, who was napping on the roof of the structure, and it swooped down and went for the magic user, who had had time to cast mirror image, but only one image, but the 50-50 chance it rolled the image. It was in roll 20 for all to see, so I'm not fudging my rolls. It's good old roll 20 serving me well. And the others fled into the tower. It breathed fire, but everybody was either side of the door, so it didn't get them. Yeah, they luck out in their choices and whatnot. A fight ensued, and as usual, I rolled terribly, and they killed the chimera. And they had lots of cool loot, and the brazier was one for summoning fire elementals. And a couple of them managed to level up. And they spent the night and learned identify so they could identify the magic they found. So that's the main thing that they're doing to extend the journey is they find loot, they want to figure out what it is, so they stop and they rest and get spells to identify it. And the next session, they come to a rock outcropping, and it's surrounded by large rocks that they can only see what looks like a bare tree in the middle of this, and they get up there, and within the rocks is a flat area with extremely lifelike statues of animals, monsters, and various intelligent creatures. And they scout around and they find, dozing in the sun, a large eight-legged lizard napping. Random rolls. That was the table I put up, and I rolled the one that it's napping. So the magic user with the brazier sets it up and fires it up and summons a fire elemental and tells it go kill the basilisk. So it kills the basilisk, and then two more come out of the cave mouth, and magic user has to go tell it to go beat on those basilisks because it had already taken care of the first one. Their gaze, I ruled, had no effect on a creature made of fire, and so combined with the blows of the fire elemental with the ranged fire of magic and arrows, they took out the three basilisks. Well, it turned out there were these three really ugly chicken-sized birds that were cockatrices, and the elemental made short work of those with additional ranged fire and magic from the party. The cave that the basilisks come out of, they figure that's where all the loot is, so the gnome thief illusionist sneaks into the cave, and he gets surprised by a woman with snakes for hair. Yes, a Medusa. But she rolled poorly, and it saved the gnome's neck. He yelled for help. Most of the party advanced, specifying that they averted their eyes, which, of course, boosted their saving throw chances, but it did give them penalties to hit, so it took a little longer for them to take her out. It was a tense few rounds. Two or three of them ended up having to roll saves versus petrification, but they rolled well, and because they outnumbered the Medusa, they finally slew her. She was wearing some of the magic items that they found, but that didn't do her enough good because she was outnumbered, and they had some magic weapons that kind of counteracted that. And I really loved all their comments about all the petrifying creatures in this encounter. And this is a location I thought of, and I mentioned it way back in episode 29 in my podcast about multi-use adventure locations. And this is one of those ideas set in time. And the other idea related to that is, how did a tree ant and a dryad end up out in the middle of the desert petrified? Well, that would be an earlier session, but we're not going to go back in time in my campaign. Just an idea. I may write that up and make a PDF out of it. So they were talking about expecting a Gorgon next, but that was not there. Their paranoia was great, so that was fun. I rolled really great for random treasure, and they found a lot of coins and gems and jewelry and weapons and armor and various miscellaneous magic. They have enough magic items that everybody should have a magic weapon, and those that are soft and squishy should have some sort of magical protection to boost their armor class a little bit. There's one thing they almost missed, was a niche up high in the back of the cave, was a neatly folded piece of cloth. It unfolded into a hole 6 feet across and 10 feet deep. Yes, they found a portable hole, and inside was a leather pouch with ivory placards inside it. And that's where we ended the session, and that gave them a week to stew over what the plaques were. Of course, the players were expecting the traditional deck of many things, but that's not what I used. It was a variation that I found online, and I tweaked it a little bit for some of the cards, and it was definitely not as prone to break the game as a deck of many things is, and they had already found a lot of treasure and magic that made them even more of a force to reckon with than they were before. They had more leveling up. The deck scared some of them enough that three of them flat out decided they weren't going to draw, and they just sat back and watched what happened. Most received neutral to minor negative effects with some minor positive things that happened. One player drew really poorly, turned out to be one of the magic users. He lost a level and a point of intelligence, so that's not so good for the magic user. He just reached level 6, so he got knocked back down to level 5. The way it was written, it didn't take him all the way to the start of level 5, so it didn't take him as long to get back, and he's already got that level back. So, of course, they stayed overnight to rest and learn spells and use Identify again, to making their trip take longer. So the next session, they encountered an ancient wreck of a sand ship. It looked more like a sailing ship modified to travel the sands than one built purposefully to travel the sands. And there were giant lizards lounging around the remains of this wreck, ancient shipwreck. But before the party could attack the lizards to see what was in the ship, a giant sandworm got a couple of the lizards and then came for one of the sand ships. It did some minor damage to one of the sand ships by ramming it before the sandworm showed up. They had stopped the ships, and so the magic user with that brazier for fire elementals got off the ship and set it up so he's not summoning a fire creature aboard a wooden ship. And the fire elemental rolled really poorly, and I think only hit the Chimera one, or the Chimera, good grief, the sandworm only once. But the other characters and the ballistas on the ship and all the crossbowmen on the ship only took a couple of rounds for him to take out the sandworm. And they only found a small amount of treasure in the ship. I think they only had like maybe the equivalent of 100 gold pieces, and there wasn't a lot in there. They could have searched for hours and maybe got another couple hundred gold pieces worth of treasure out of it. But they did get some more teeth from the sandworm and the stinger, and they cut it open and they found a few gems. So they got more monster XP that time than treasure, I think. Not finding any magic, they didn't delay. And finally, they entered the territory of the red lizard folk, and I call them the Sthm, S-S-T-H-M. And these lizard folks are adapted to life in the desert. And the Sand Vikings knew of these red lizard folk and had dealings with them. And they met, and the Sand Vikings agreed to take a representative, Sthok, and his Qual. And a Qual is a large flightless bird that they use as a mount. I stole that name from my brother Robert's campaign of the desert that I mentioned way back when, early in the podcast. I don't know which one, but it was where they were, a place called Abdul's, where you could buy anything you wanted. So you can go check that out. Anyway, so they agreed to take them along to talk to the Sand Vikings about working with them against the Son of the Necromancer. And somehow the Red Lizard folk know about the Temple of Binding, and they know about the Necromancer. And they had an omen of a giant lizard that was born with three eyes. And the lizard folk know that if the Sand Vikings can't stop the Son of the Necromancer, that the lizard folk are the only force between the Son of the Necromancer and the Temple of Binding, where the Son of the Necromancer is trying to free the Necromancer, who is buried in the Tomb of the Necromancer, coincidentally under the Temple of Binding. And of course, they rested for the night before they headed on. The next day, they're still in the Red Lizard Folk territory. They come to yet another rock outcropping. This one has a beehive tomb on it, and there were signs of fire damage. It didn't look like any living thing was there at the moment. There were signs of lion tracks. They come to where there's a opening on one end of this, and they see a sarcophagus on a pedestal, and the lid has been shoved off to the far side. They go in cautiously and find a skeleton that's got some armor, a wand, and some other things on him, a scroll, I think, and they're all salivating over what is in here and maybe some other riches, because they see some gold and jewels scattered about. And then the manticores came home and go after the party members that are on the outside. One goes after the magic user that had used fly to go up and look down in the opening that was broken in the top of this tomb to see what was going on in case whatever's in the sarcophagus got up. It didn't. And one manticore, of course, went for him, hit him, and thankfully for the party, the ballistas from the ships managed to hit, plus enough of their crossbows hit to finish off that manticore. But they still had three manticores to go, but the other magic user was inside the tomb, and he managed to slow two of those manticores. But one that was not slowed ended up randomly going for the lizardfolk emissary's thok, and he was taking a beating. And several of them ended up hurt pretty good, but slowly they began dropping the manticores. One by one, they eventually bested all the manticores, and they ended up with magic armor, a wand, a scroll, and jewels, and I don't know, maybe something else. And of course, they had to stay the night and identify all the magic that they found. So now we're back. We're finally caught up to where we were last session. They're finally exiting the territory of the Red Lizard Folk, and they see a cave in the distance, and they find lion tracks. But this time it really is lions. And they have what the gnome thief illusionist ended up in one of the caches of treasure they found, ending up with a robe of blending. So he snuck around and got in front of the mouth and saw the three lions lounging in the mouth of the cave. And the druid was off to the side of the cave out of sight. And the rest of the party went over the top of the cave. And one of the magic users cast enlarge on the lizard folk ambassador's thok. So he was big enough to have hill giant strength. So he leapt down and struck a lion, didn't quite drop it. The others joined in the fray. A lion that had been further back in the cave leapt on Stock's back, and so he was just getting mangled. But as usual, the party eventually started dropping lions and bested the lions. Then they go to the back of the cave, and there's a pool of fresh water that appears to be spring-fed. And as they're investigating it, this is hilarious, the gnome thief illusionist cast phantasmal force to make it look like there were sharks in the water, and every single member of the party fail their save, so everybody believes there's sharks in this. Now, the elf picked up a horn of the tritons in one of their more recent encounters with something, and he blew it, and they see a sloshing of water come at them as if something on the other side of the wall fled. So the gnome drops the illusion when he blows that, and they think that's what gets rid of the sharks. And they all cautiously get in the pool, and they find a tiny opening, and one of the magic user has the spell shrink. He carries it for combat, because if they run into giant-sized opponents, they like to shrink them so they're not massively strong anymore if you shrink them. He shrinks the gnome, who crawls through, and he needs air, travels till he finds an air pocket, and he discovers that his gauntlets of climbing are also gauntlets of swimming, because he swims really well now. Of course, they stay overnight, because they want to see. Obviously, the DM put this here. We've got to figure out what's back behind there. During the night, more of the lions came back. That must have been a hunting party. And, of course, the Sand Vikings and the party drive them off. The next day, the druid cast Stone Shape to make the opening big enough for a single-file human-sized characters to squeeze through. The giant crocodile chomps down and can't get at them because the opening's not big enough. But the cleric ranger wisely uses Speak with Animals and agrees to give the crocodile some tribute, which is lion meat. The benefit of that spell in first edition is it makes the animals friendly or non-aggressive to the party. So that was a very great use of the spell. They find more crocodiles and the sandy beach at the back of the cave where they rest and nest. Then the gnome swims down and finds an opening below the little opening where they came in, and there's a small tunnel, and as he goes in to investigate, he sees a giant tentacle coming after him, so he swims away, and just as he gets away, the tentacle follows through that opening that they had made bigger. But the two magic users, being high enough level, each of them zap it with a lightning bolt, and it's pulling back. The others do missile fire and other magic, and the tentacle goes limp, and the crocodiles move in for a feeding frenzy. And then the gnome goes back to check out and finds at the end of this opening that curves around, there's a void where the squid had its lair, and there's coins and gems and other things scattered about. And he reaches down and pulled out something randomly, turns out to be a Bolan scroll case. He takes it back up top. One of the magic users checks it out, and they have a scroll of protection from undead. We left off with the party making plans for how to get the loot out without drowning, because it's like, what, 180 feet down or something like that, and then you've got to go 60 feet through this tunnel to this void space, and then you've got to do all this, and so they've got limited time. The portable hole would probably hold it all, but it would fill up with water. We'll see. They might end up losing some party members or magic trying to make this happen. Druid does have underwater breathing or whatever it's called. Not high enough level to have airy water, so they won't be able to cast spells. So this is going to be interesting. I'll see how they play that out. And they also have to worry about hypothermia. So we'll see. The next game will be Sunday. My hope is to have another podcast after that game. My surgery is scheduled for next Friday, the 12th. And so not knowing how I'll feel after surgery, I obviously didn't plan on having a game the Sunday following that. And depending on how I'm feeling, maybe not the next Sunday after that. I've been doing lots of planning for different things that are between where the players are now and where the Son of the Necromancer is, trying to minimize what amount of effort it's going to take to get back to running the game, because I don't know how I'll be feeling. I don't know if I'll have motivation or even energy to do it, because I've never had major surgery like that before. I'll do a quick rundown of Sunday's game, so if you're interested, you won't be wondering what happened. I had been planning on devoting an entire episode to every one of my sessions, but needs to take care of some personal loose ends before surgery took priority. I just wanted to minimize undone things so I'm not sitting around thinking about them and those gnawing at me, aggravating my recovery, because I want to heal up right and not overdo it and then end up regretting it, because I've had other injuries in the past. I didn't give myself enough time and those injuries start bothering me the older I get, so I don't want that to happen with this. And so I'm not entirely sure how long until I get back to podcasting after surgery. It's going to depend on how I'm feeling and all the other things that are going on. But I will be updating my status on my other social media, mostly Twitter. So if you're interested in how things are going with the surgery and you don't want to wait around until I get around to a podcast, you can follow me on my social media until I get back to podcasting. That's really all I've got for now. I really think everybody for all your thoughts and concerns. I really thank everybody that's been buying my PDFs, and a couple people bought some of my shirts and such on my Teespring store. I've got over 850 subscribers on YouTube, so I'm getting closer and closer to that 1,000 mark, so I may actually make it this year, even though it slowed down quite a bit. I've got some plans to try to get some more YouTube episodes up before surgery. Or at least record some and schedule them. We'll see how that goes. So until next time, thank you all for playing. I hope you're getting along with your situation in the whole pandemic situation. I hope your spirits are up, that you're getting to game. And as always, game on. Follow Me and Die is an old school RPG podcast. I share my experiences and ideas about role-playing games that all started with the Holmes Blue Box Basic Dungeons & Dragons over 40 years ago. I've played lots of role-playing games that were new in the late 70s through the mid-80s, and some of those I still like to play, especially Dungeons & Dragons. But there's more than older role-playing games out there. I share ideas that will fit into any game or genre. So check out my podcast. I'm always looking for a few good minions.
Better do what Grubba says.